everyone, to Season 1, Episode 1 of Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. I'm Stan, a regular host. I am joined by Jim. Say hello, Jim.
Stan, so glad to launch the show finally.
Oh, I know. We've been looking forward to this one for a long time, my friend. Jack. Jack is in the building.
Hey, I'm sorry if I screw up. This is my first ever podcast, but... Where the hell's Brad? Is he here?
I don't know.
Is he back from the Action Movie Festival yet?
I think he might be missing in the Action Movie Festival.
Why are we starting? Nick's here, right?
Greetings and salutations.
Sorry, like I said, I've never done this before. It might be a little rough.
That's okay, you know. Well, I'm sure we'll figure it out as we go. The most important thing...
Jack, you may be used to rough trade, but that's not how we do things here.
Well, then I need to definitely get on a different podcast.
We're off to a classy beginning already. I think the listeners have already gotten a sense of what this is going to be like. That's if you tried a 30-second sample, you've got a good feel already.
I hope there's listeners. I guess we should be thanking the We Talk Podcasts.
We Talk Podcasts. Yes, you can visit them at wetalkpodcast.com.
Yeah, they're hosting this for us. We approached them about this idea for this show, right? And they're like, "What?" There was an asshole. His name, what was it? Mo. And then there was this other guy, also an asshole, but not as big, Brett. And then
he's shorter, right?
Total assholes, though.
They were kind enough
to let us do this.
Yeah, I suppose
because we're not assholes.
No, well, I'm not asshole at all.
You're a jackhole.
I got one. Anyways, what the hell is the podcast about again?
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. This is the search for the best B movie that we can find. The best B movie ever, in our humble opinions.
The ultimate B movie. Wasn't that what we said? The
ultimate B movie.
The ultimate B movie. Yeah, no, it's cool, man. What are the this is our first ever show. We should give the people a little background. What else you got there, man? Like the categories of shit? Are we gonna wait for that or?
Well, you know, the categories are gonna shift around a bit, but we got some what the fuck action, you know, a little WTF. We got how much we actually liked it. There's more heart than budget. You know, there's all sorts of good stuff going on. I mean, I know, and we got some interesting stuff, because what we're going to do for every single movie is we're going to add some modifiers. And now the modifiers are going to be able to add, like, a point. A lot of them are going to be to do with the length of the movie. Some of them are going to be to do with nudity, because, you know, I've heard that some people like nudity.
Yeah.
Around here. Obviously, Jack does.
Yeah. What? Sorry, man. Like I said, it's new for me. I don't have to do that adding, do I?
I will handle the math. The hard math part.
I don't think we ever met in person. What's your...
Jim's got the math.
Jim is okay, in charge. Should we...
All right, cool, man.
Is it extra B movie if we just refer to each other in the third person, like ourselves in the third person? So Jim will be doing the math. So, and I think it's important that we say for the beginning that... there's a lot of B movie podcasts out there that really just want to talk about how much they don't like these movies and how terrible the movies are. We are big fans of low budget B movies, the VHS era, the Grindhouse era. We love these things. And we are a group of film buffs who would think nothing of a double bill of Schindler's List and Sharknado. We love all movies.
I hate to tell you this, but I've never seen Schindler's List.
Have you seen Sharknado, though? I love those. I've watched Schindler's List once. It's, you know, it's heavy. But
yeah, that's Sharknado, the thing, right?
I've watched that several times because it's
awesome. Oh, yeah. I've seen Sharknado twice, Schindler's List, zero. You know, that's really, I'm far more into Sharknado than I am Schindler's List.
I don't know. I'm in charge of the math, so I will tell you that's infinitely more. I want to bring it. That's why I'm in charge of the math. Is that
yes,
two is infinite more than zero?
You have a program that will help you do the math, so I know we can handle it. So at the end of the episode, we're going to announce what we're going to do for the next episode. But I can tell you that in this case, right now, this is season one, and this is called All American Ninjas. That kind of gives you a hint of what's coming.
No, dude, it's called White Dragon.
All American Ninjas.
White Dragon.
Sorry.
Colon.
Yes. All dash American Ninjas. There we go. Just if we want to be correct.
It should be dash. Yeah. Is that an M? It's an M dash is what they call
it. Did we vote on that yet? Or
well, we're stalemated on so much with Brad away.
That's true, man.
That's why we had five people to start with, is so that we wouldn't have stalemate votes. But
no, you haven't seen him at all, huh? He's just gone.
No,
he's missing.
Oh. Yeah,
crazy. All right. Well, can't wait for him, right? Like,
nope.
People, we've already rambled on for way too long. People want to hear about the movie. What's the movie, man?
I'm super excited because one of my favorite movies of the genre is first off the list. It inspired my opening. It's Gymkhana. And I love me some Gymkhana. So who's going to tell me about Gymkhana?
What the hell was your opening?
Oh, again? Shit. We were supposed to watch Gymkhana?
You watched Schindler's List again, didn't you? I hope you made good notes.
All right, Nick, tell us about Gymkhana. At least the movie that you watched.
But it's Brad's turn to do this.
No, yeah, but this is the summary. We call it the... did we have a name for it?
I don't think we have.
Didn't we want to come up with a cool name for everything?
Come up with a name for this part. We got names for everything else except this part.
Yeah.
Nick Boxer's box.
Nick Boxer's box.
I don't know. I'd rather see you wrestle. I don't want to see your box.
The soap boxer.
I like that. The soap boxer.
The soap boxer featuring Nick Boxer.
Hold on. Wait. So your last name is Boxer?
Of course it is.
Nice. Nice. I should have actually learned about you guys before we started this.
Jack's just a drifter that we brought into the podcast.
I'll look you up on Facebook now. You're there, right? Nick Boxer, if I look you up. So all the fans can go look you up, too.
I'm exclusively on Snapchat.
I'm more of a MySpace guy.
Well, I mean, that's if you're more of a music creator, that is the space you want to be in.
You can visit me on my band page.
Do you have a Bandcamp page? Is that I don't do music, but that is where I prefer to have my social media presence. Bandcamp.
Yeah. somewhere in my GeoCities website. Anyways,
GeoCities.
Angel Fire.
Speaking of B movies, GeoCities is right. The place to do.
Would anyone like to know about Gymkhana?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Yeah. Let's do the Nick Boxer. The boxing soap boxer?
Nick's soap boxer.
I love that, man. Let's write that down as done.
All right. I tried to formulate these into a minute and a half, so let's do this. Jonathan Cabinet, Olympic gymnast, is recruited into a shadowy American agency, the SAA, to compete in the game. The game is a competition held in Parmenistan, a strategically valuable a country that offers victors of the game one wish, which the SAS wish to use to plant a satellite monitoring station to spy on Parmenistan's neighbors. Internal conflict in Parmenistan, international intrigue, and the general bizarreness of the game complicate Jonathan's goals.
So that's what was going on.
Honestly, I my favorite part of Gymkhana is how little sense any of it makes. Like, there's so much. I was watching it. I'm like, I have no idea why this part is happening at all.
Dude, Nick, what I'd like to know is, did you come up with that, or was that like
did you
was
just
that
read off of
read off somebody? Because I was hoping you would like tell me about it from your point of view, because I really couldn't follow you. That had a lot of big words and shit, and
you kind of, you know, it's not Parmenistan, it's Parmistan.
I thought it was Parmesan.
Parmesan was pretty close. Yeah. So where do we start with this?
It's my segment, right?
Well, no, we're just talking now. Don't jump ahead to you.
We're talking about the movie.
Yeah, well, we could talk about the movie. You can throw some stuff in, but we want to actually just talk. I think you might be describing it for the listener. Now, I don't mean that in the plural.
I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding that half of what he said I had no clue of. I mean, that's not like an exaggeration. I had no idea what was going on with this thing. That's part of the movie's charm.
Now, the thing I found most confusing was the father. Now, he obviously competed in the game the year previous.
Well, no, I think
he competed in the game pattern to when they have years. The game.
Yeah,
like, I think it was no. Like, yeah, there is no pattern.
We see the game three times in the movie, so there doesn't seem to be it's not an annual thing. It just seems to be when people show up, they do the game.
See, I thought one of those games was just a sample with criminals.
it was vague. What like how long it took him to? I mean, presumably it took months to train him in Gymkata.
the secret and artist. Why did he need to be a gymnast?
Otherwise, he would just be doing kata.
I mean, if the SIA really wanted to win this thing, wouldn't a Marine be a better fit? Only athletes were competing because everyone seemed to know what Thorgi was.
Okay, dude, one of my favorite things about this movie was how every single person outside of him competing in it did not look anything like an athlete.
I watched this with my wife and she had never seen it. And that was one of her comments is like why does everyone else like a middle-aged bowler kind of look instead of like there's the giant and then there's Gymkata. Who the entire time she just called Gymkata. she didn't bother.
You mean that wasn't there. His name?
It was close enough, honestly.
Jonathan Cabot was his name.
I don't know that anyone calls him that, honestly. Like, I think he probably say it early on and then never again. But like no one else, you're right, no one else looks like an athlete. Everyone else just looks like, looks like you're like their next door neighbor came in to help them with the game. I don't know.
But they're all wearing track suits, so you can tell who's an athlete.
That's how you know. Clear.
The clothing in this thing was amazing.
I love the guy in the yellow track suit that you really thought was going to have a good death and then dies off screen.
there was a fair bit of dying off screen, but I love the fact that they managed to get Mel Brooks to play the king of
Parmesan. I could not get that over my head.
I thought it was him for like the first. I'm like, I'm not kidding, Ethan. Like, I totally know what you mean. And you know who it actually was? Here's one of the trivia facts I got. This are the we're calling these the facts of Fury, right? Do you know who this guy was? Buck Cartelian. And you know who he played? He was Julius in Planet of the Apes.
No way.
He wouldn't know because he had all the ape stuff on him. Julius was like the slaver, security or whatever. And he's the one who Charlton Heston, he really hated him. So he used to be a bodybuilder and a professional wrestler. And he just died a couple of years ago at 93. He was 93 years old in 2016.
So this is supposed to take place in the Hindu Kush, which is northern Afghanistan, northern Pakistan. And this guy looks like he just walked off of the set of Fiddler on the Roof.
Yes. Did he ever.
I could accept that. I had more of a problem with his daughter being Asian.
She didn't have the ethnicity of anybody else in like the whole movie. She didn't have the same ethnicity.
He's the only Asian person in the entire film. That is my favorite line in the entire movie. Is during Cabot's training, the weird CIA like secret ops guy that's training him, and then appears one more time in the film and then disappears. So Cabot asks what is her story, and he says she has an interesting background. Her mother was Indonesian. And then he says nothing else.
Yes. That is the way that you explain the fact that they hired an Asian actress for the part, and you move on.
He said her mother was Indonesian, and then there's 3 seconds of dead silence, and then they go on to the next scene.
I don't understand why they'd complicate an obviously complicated movie already with that casting.
What? Come on. There's nothing complicated about the idea of the U.S. wanting to place a Star Wars missile site on a strategic Hindu Kush region, and of course sending a gymnast to do the job of a special forces op. And meanwhile, okay, fair enough, it's complicated, but
I'll tell you why they cast her. Here's her name is, and I'm going to definitely screw this up. I mean, I couldn't say Buck Cartelian or whatever. So, I mean, it's Chechki Agbayani, and she was a Playboy model in the Philippines. And now she's a psychology professor in the Philippines.
That is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So, that's...
And honestly, I have seen some of her Playboy photos, and it's a crying shame there's not a nude scene in this movie.
Nice looking lady, huh?
She's an attractive young lady.
Yes.
Well, now she's, you know, now she's a moderately attractive, like 65-year-old lady. But at the time, I mean, I'm sure she's fine for, you know, 60.
Can I ask you something about this, Jim? What again? What's that? What the hell is your last name?
Kata.
Jim Kata.
Yeah, it's Irish. So I want to get back to you.
Did you get a piece of this then?
No,
you weren't even born when this film came out yet, were you?
My whole childhood.
You weren't even born when this came out yet, were you?
Yeah, I went by James Cotta the whole time.
30?
School, honestly. Yeah, ish. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Stan, you summarized like why they want this country, but what they actually say is a Star Wars satellite station inside Parmistan could monitor all the other satellites around the world. and I honestly, I've tried over and over to figure out what that means.
that's very powerful.
Well, we all know satellites only work from certain places.
We got a lot going on here. I can't believe that's what you fixed. Fixing. We got a village of idiots.
Crazies. Yes, it's crazy.
And you have a problem with the technology of satellites not being fully explained.
Well, what was the thing?
Where you're going with this?
What was your biggest like laugh out loud thing that like you were like, holy shit, you know, that made you laugh?
Consistently, it was the extras. I think they put out a casting call for the ugliest people ever. I mean,
I don't want to blow off all my facts right away because some of these are so great. You're making me want to
jump in. We don't have all the time. So
okay, well, yes. Like okay, so get okay. So you're talking about the Countdown of Crazies, which is like the most infamous scene in the whole thing.
Not even the crazies. I mean, I am just talking people walking down the street of Turkmenistan or whatever. There are some seriously, excuse me, ugly people. I mean, really, the maid they put him in bed with is seriously scary.
Okay, well, I'll tell you this: the Town of Crazies, like I say, is probably the most infamous scene. Like that's like the last 20 minutes. It's unbelievable. It was so great. The Town of Crazies is the greatest thing you've ever put. If they had just had the Town of Crazies and just made that the movie without the rest, we'd be debating whether it's this or Citizen Kane for greatest film of all time.
We might have needed a second pommel horse in the Town of Crazies. If it was that long.
So awesome.
The pommel horse being in there was
no
so great.
Reason. So that pommel horse, yeah, that was...
Oh, no, it was there for a reason, because that's the only way that he can do any action.
Well, no, they had to tie the goat up to it. That was why it was really there. Yeah,
yeah. Is the Town of Crazies was actually filled out by, other than the people he fought, those were stuntmen, it was actually filled out by people from the local insane asylum, and they got them down there by promising them buffet and alcohol.
Shit, oh, my God, that's awesome.
That is great. That is fantastic.
Hey, I'm going to just throw off the rest of the I'm going to throw off the rest of the facts here, because like you say, we don't have forever. So directed by Robert Klaus, of course, Enter the Dragon. This thing earned an astonishing $5.7 million at the box office. That amazes me in 1985.
If we had been older, it would have been all us.
Oh yeah. Well, it won a poll. It's on DVD because it won a poll of films to be released. So that's how it got to DVD. Kurt Thomas, who plays the lead character. What the hell was his name there?
Jonathan Nick? Cabot.
All right, so he plays Jonathan Cabot. In real life, he missed the Olympic team but he was an athlete. He didn't go to the Olympics because of the boycott, but he's a world champion. He lost a lot of things, though. He lost out on the Olympic dream because of the boycott in 1980. He also lost out on the 1986 Razzie Award for Best New Star to Bridget Nielsen for Red Sonja and Rocky IV.
Do we know his sexual orientation? Because the chemistry was off.
He runs a gymnast studio, been married a long time. He was in the infomercial for Total Gym Fitness Program with Christie Brinkley and Chuck Norris. So that makes him cool right there.
Oh, please let me tell me they used footage from Jim Cotty in the advertisements.
He did every stunt in the movie except for one, the tumble into the alley, the long tumble in the alley and car balls he didn't do. He had no background in martial arts, which if you've seen the film is believable.
That makes sense. It does make sense, yeah.
Yeah. The choreography from the film, Richard Norton, who played the villain, Zamir, he was the stunt coordinator and did the choreography. He's a ninth degree dojo or ninth Dan in Zendu Kai. And he worked as a personal bodyguard for the Rolling Stones, James Taylor, David Bowie, ABBA, John Belushi, Fleetwood Mac, all sorts of stuff. And he did the choreography. Apparently the choreography for this film was done by him and the producers walking over to Kurt Thomas and asking him what he could do physically that would look good. And that's why Jim Cotta translates directly into, I believe, kicking and flipping, because all that he did, the sweater, we talk about everything, the sweater that he wears, the red, white, and blue sweater, is infamous. That's because Kurt Thomas, on his way to go film this in Yugoslavia, was in Italy, stopped in and picked up that sweater at a shop in Italy. And when he showed up, they just looked at him and said, "Hey, just wear that."
So, I love that sweater. I want to cosplay in that sweater.
That's the sweater is amazing. Also, the person who was other in the running for the role with him, Christopher Atkins, most famous for co-starring with what's her name? Blue Lagoon, Brooke Shields. So yeah.
That's
yeah.
When I looked in at the Wikipedia page at the bottom,
I'm doing the trivia. Remember, that was the whole point. You're not supposed to look.
No, I was just looking right now.
rather than listen to you, he probably would just start doing some
I'm not some, looking at some any extra trivia. Reading. I'll just catch up
on what I've got saved. Up where we
stand. For any of our listeners out there, you know, instead of listening to this podcast, you can just look this shit up on Wikipedia.
Some of it is true. I just found it amusing.
Reading you Wikipedia entries so that you don't have to.
Yes. Yeah. I found it amusing that, because this is on Maxim's worst movies of all time list, number 17, I think it is. But I like it because it says, Jim Cotta, if you need a covert operative to work in a hostile environment that just happens to be littered with gymnastics equipment, Jonathan Cabot is your man. U.S. gymnast Kurt Thomas plays Cabot, who fights for America's right to build a missile base in tiny Parmistan. On the plus side, the cinematographer helps make diminutive Thomas look human size.
I thought it was fantastic that they gave a role this important to a little person.
I don't know.
Very forward thinking.
I don't know what you guys were thinking, but did anybody else, as the movie wind down and were they like, have a burning desire to watch Richard Dean Anderson as MacGyver? Like that haircut.
He
definitely has that.
Jack, you asked earlier about the parts of the movie that just made me laugh out loud. It was when the king explains the game using a scale model of the game. that is not great. In any way to scale. Makes absolutely no sense with what you have seen prior or see later in the game. Because he starts, it's a 3-mile run across swamp. Now, if you watch the movie, the first part is a run across a cornfield. And then he says it ends with a run through the swamp again. And it's clearly a forest at the end of the game. So
yeah, I find it so interesting what you're fixating on. We got a guy in this who wears a mask on the back of his head to sneak up on people, which I can't figure out how that helps.
I was saving.
And you're talking about the geography.
I was saving that. It was not the geography. It's the model. It's that he has a model of the game that does not actually play the game.
The model looks like it was built by a 12-year-old. Like it's like that was Princess Rubali's, science project when she was fucking eight.
You made a volcano and Princess, what have you built? I've built a scale model of the game.
Well, the thing is, I'm still hoping one of you can tell me what the rules of the game are. I have no idea.
I was so unclear on the rules of the game.
All I know is the part that I love is that you're sitting there and the guy in first place is the one that they seem to want to kill. So the guy in last place doesn't get killed for being in last place. The guy who they really want to kill on the way is the guy in first place, just to even things out.
No, it's simple. There are zones.
and judges. There's judges.
What?
There's zones and judges.
Judges don't want to do anything besides point of flag. And
one of the guys gets killed. They have like prisoners or something like that who do it beforehand to show us the rules of it. Really cleared it up for me. Thanks. And they show us these guys running, and then one of them gets killed by one of these guards or whatever during these judges. I don't know, something's going on, and then somebody kills him, and the Kurt Thomas just looks at him and goes, "Why did he do that?" And he goes, "He killed him too early or something." And I'm like, "He didn't wait.
You're not allowed to do him. You're not allowed to kill him within the zone," and they break that rule literally every time they show a zone.
Yes.
But Richard Norton's cheating. That's why the game is unfair.
But that's what makes the game so hard to understand is that they cheat consistently. So what actually is the rules of the game?
Oh God, I can't wait till we get to Rollerball. This is going to be awful.
And here's the thing: this thing is based on a novel, and apparently
I can't wait. I need to find this novel. It's like a
1950s. It's open library.
It's easy. It's easy to find.
And apparently, it's a really good novel. that's part of the thing is they were originally going to do a version of it with Rock Hudson in the 60s. And
well, because the game in the novel is all about like knights and that kind of stuff, so like it's knights and armor. It's way different.
Put aside everything else about the game and how nothing else in the game makes sense. So all they tell you when they run through the step-by-step of the game is then you have to enter the village. Then you have to survive the village of the damned. It does not say anything you're supposed to do there. So he goes in and he passes the pommel horse where the goat is, travels for like 10 or 15 minutes, and then comes back to that, which is right by the doors.
You know what I love about this movie is he's training. Like, let's go to this. He's doing the training thing. And then they leave America and they're on their way and they show up at some other place to get some other information. And there's these other agents and they're betraying him. There's all these white guys running through the streets at a clearly confused Kurt Thomas who doesn't know what street he's supposed to turn. And trying to kill him for no reason because the princess has been kidnapped. And then like he just shows up at the end. It's like she's back. Basically, you know, like it just nothing happens. Like this doesn't advance the plot. This has nothing to do with anything else in the movie. It's like they said, "Fuck, we need another 10 minutes." Just threw this together. And there's this part where he jumps on this bar and he flips around for a while and kicks a bunch of people. Then he kicks somebody who isn't one of the bad guys. And he just kind of leans over him and goes, Yeah, he looks at him and he kind of touches his face. You'll be okay.
And when he's in that scene, like when he's first there in that city, wherever it's supposed to be, the staging area, he's shown all this special weaponry, like a Q scene in James Bond, and then not a single one of those things appears again in the film.
Well, that's because the guy that was showing it to him turned out to be he was a bad guy.
So I mean, like they go through this step by step, showing him two or three different weapons that he never once uses.
The Stork or something like that was his name. Like he was something like that. I can't remember the ostrich, the Stork, something like that. He was
nothing in that whole. Like it is an awesome section because it's just so nonsensical, and he has to rescue the princess, and they tell him it's a terrorist training camp, and it's like.
You'll never be able to get into this
impenetrable fortress, and it's like a mansion with six guys in it.
Yeah, and then he kicks her. But I love the very beginning, because let's get back to the beginning. The beginning is his father took place in the game all those years ago, or maybe a year before. I can't tell. Or
maybe a month and a half.
I believe it was 6 weeks. Yes.
So he's. So his father gets on this bridge and he falls, and you see him fall from like 100 feet up, and you see the body, like they use this good dummy, this dummy smack on the rocks.
And they have established big time that there is rocks.
Yeah. Rocks.
He hits and the judge right next to it.
Yes.
The judges who it's never clear what they do, but there is one standing there to go, yeah, he fell.
Yeah.
And he just on the plus side,
it's violent.
The judges never, they never interfere. Even though they're like ninjas as well, they never actually interfere with any of the match. So
ninjas are just so amazing. So this is the part that had me laughing the most, because you mentioned how he was saved by the guy who was his, I don't know, his handler or whatever from the SIA, is that what he called it there? Whatever.
Yes, it's the SIA. I believe it's a real government agency, according to this movie. So
okay, yeah,
I'm willing to take anything in this.
So, anyways, so he dies, just smacks, and you see him fall the whole way. It's not a cutaway. You see the body fall from 100 feet up the whole way down, smack into the rocks. So now at the end, after you mentioned how his handler guy saved him. In the other thing, so at the end, he's in this village of the idiots or damned or whatever the hell it is, or crazies, whatever the hell's going on here. After he's escaped and he can't get away, and somebody reaches down to grab him and pulls him up, and I'm like, well, it's the same handler dude. No, he pulls off the mask, and this is the part where I laughed the most. It's his dad. His dad, who had fallen 100 feet. And I literally go, what? And laugh for like 20 minutes.
I'm like, oh, it's the handler. Well, oh wait, it's why isn't it the handler? Actually, it's the only thing I could think of.
And then,
actually, no, Jack, I'm going to correct you, because you do not see a cutaway of him falling. I just watched it, and it is there's no cutaway. So you just see him wince after getting hit by an arrow. He falls, and then it cuts to an interminably long. Gymnastics scene.
Oh yeah, the first 15 minutes of this movie are the credits with him doing gymnastics in slow motion. Yeah, are you sure about that on parallel bars? Are you sure?
1,000,000,000%.
I saw the European version, because I swear I got it in my head seeing him land. But anyway,
Jack, I don't like that you're questioning Gymkhana.
I'm sorry, Jim. I think I was thinking of one of the prisoners.
I meant the film.
Yeah, I'm thinking of one of the prisoners who fell. But either way, he falls. There's no way out. He falls. He's in the middle of a bridge, in the middle of a cavern.
The thing is, they establish that there is nothing but rocks and like 2 feet of water at the bottom. I don't know how anyone could survive. Anyway,
so then his dad is there.
He hurt his arm, man.
He did. His arm was useless.
That's true.
It's not where the arrow hit him, but
he landed on his arm. It absorbed the ball.
His arm. So
then he had big arms.
So then this is great. So then, like he's, and you're like his dad, and then it's kind of sweet, and they're like hugging and stuff like that. Like 2 seconds later, they apparently kill off the dad again, and then you find out, no, he's okay. He's just they ride him into town later. He'll be all right. So all of this. Finally, he gets his dad. You kill him right away. Then it turns out he's not dead. I love this movie.
love this movie. Oh, I mean, joyful. Oh my god, this movie's joyful.
This is such a great classic.
I wish we'd been able to watch this together. I wish we'd been able to watch this together. Number one, it'd be nice to meet you guys. And it'd be so much fun. In fact, in the future, we're going to be doing other, I guess, Stan, you'll be sharing some of the...
For a second, I meant Brad, and Brad's not here.
Yeah, Brad couldn't make it. He's at the Action Film Festival.
Brad, that's right. Yeah. That's where he's missing from?
I miss him. I don't know about anyone else. I miss him.
Well, you know him, huh? I've never met the guy.
He has nice calves. I'm just saying.
I think he uses the Total Gym Fitness for that. But so anyways. So
how could you not want to?
So we're gonna be announcing some of the other I can't remember. I had a point there. Now I forgot.
Well, let's transition here into scoring. As we search for the ultimate B movie, we are going to give ratings to these movies every episode as we talk about them, and you can play along at home. We're going to keep on the We Talk Podcast website, wetalkpodcast.com. We're going to keep a chart as we go through them so that you can root for your favorites. The scores won't change. So, you know, if we give them a bad score, that they're not going anywhere on the chart. Don't get your hopes up too much that there's going to be a relook at any of these. So we came up with five categories. And the important thing is that none of these are about objective quality, because that's nonsense anyway. So we love these movies, and we wanted to have categories that were focused on the fun of these films. So I'll start, and then we'll run through.
Do you know, Jim, what the IMDb score is?
I didn't look. I did not look.
Just make a guess. Make a guess.
5.6.
Okay, and make a guess there. What's his name? Nick.
Nick.
I am going 4.42.
You got well. They don't do point twos yet.
They only do one dozen.
Okay, no. You have to search deep in the analytics, man.
Okay, it's 4.7, which is shockingly high to me. But I was looking at some of these films. It is shockingly high. Because let's face it, this film is a 2, which makes it a 10.
I gave it a 10.
Yeah,
I rate every movie as I watch it, and I gave this a 10 because it was joyful.
All right,
I only gave. In fairness, I gave Schindler's List a 10, so you probably, you know.
Well, it's known to be joyful.
Yeah. There's what one, like what someone might call like objective quality, and then there's joy. So we'll start is the best way, like, I'll do a category, then go around the horn, do the next category?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that sounds
good. All right, so our first category is called Schlock Appeal. That is when a movie, the seeming badness of a movie actually makes it more enjoyable, which is a lot of what we've been talking about. So let's start with you, Stan. And this is a score.
All right, well, out of 10, I mean, I love Gymkhana because it's so bad. Nothing seems out of place at all. You know, whether it's the bad acting, the ridiculous plot elements, the fact that you have a gymnast as a martial artist, it's just this perfect bundle, and they take it so seriously. That's what I love about this. So I gave it a 9.
All right. Nick?
You know what? I think the name says it all. It explains the movie perfectly. You know what you're in for, how much fun this movie is going to be. Gymkhana, I'm giving it an 8. Pretty high score on the shock appeal. All
Schlock. Right. It's not shock.
Schlock.
Schlock. I guess it's me next.
Yeah, go, Jack. Yeah, no,
I didn't think it was. For most of it, I didn't think the schlock is as high as a lot of films I've seen out there. Like, it was high, but it wasn't as high as... I still think they were trying... Like, to me, part of the schlock appeal is when you're embracing the fact that this is not very good. And I didn't think they were embracing that until they got to the Town of Crazies. That pumped it way up. I give it a 7.
7, all right. So I'll say that when Brad was asking me to be on the show and recruiting me for this, he asked what movie would you dream of having on this kind of show, and I said Gymkhana. So I'm giving this a 10. It is everything and a bag of chips.
Hey, weren't you in the Marines or something like that, or the Army with Brad? Isn't that where you know him from? I thought I saw that on your. I was trolling you on your.
Yeah, we were on the. We were in the air, with the Air National Guard Reserve, together. Yeah.
Cool.
That's Marines? Where it's, I mean, those relationships are forever. That's where your brothers are.
That's so, where your brothers are.
Simplify. The next category is called More Heart Than Budget. So this is how a movie overreaches. Uses every part of the buffalo, which is, I'm sure, is a phrase you're not supposed to use anymore. So Stan, let's we'll keep this going around, Stan.
All right. Well, I'm not really sure they overreached for this movie. I definitely think they were kind of lucky to get what they got with what they had. So I gave it a 3.
3, okay. Nick?
Pretty low on this scale. I don't think there was a lot of heart going on. I think this was a paycheck for everybody involved.
I hope they got
so paid. I'm only giving it a 4.
Yeah.
All right, 4. Jack?
You know what? I'm probably generous here. I gave it a 6, but... Yeah, I mean, one of the things for me, when I think more heart than budget, it's like, look, I do think they were trying to make a good movie, so that's why I'm giving it a 6, but I guess probably that's a generous one, and as we go on and we get better at this, and I've done podcasts in the future, I don't think I'd be, if I was redo this, I'd probably already go lower, but I'm going to stick with my 6, because that's what I gave it when I was done, but yeah, because, I mean, there's like no crazy special effects where you're like, oh, they're trying to pull that off, but they fucked it up. It's all just bad filmmaking. Like, it's not that they didn't have the budget to do it.
Yeah, it's not like they tried a scene with mirrors or something like that that had never been done before and tried to figure out how to do that. No, like, because I, even though Klaus did it, I don't think he really did it.
All right, I'm only giving it a 4 as well. I don't think that they pushed too far with the resources. There's a couple of fun scenes for what they did do, though. The next one is, and maybe everyone wants to throw in a specific example. This is the WTF. These are the moments that are there for no reason. They're not thought out, or they're just awesome and weird. Strange, unneeded scenes, strange plot decisions. might see some higher numbers out of this one, given the conversation. Stan, why don't you start with something?
See, I mean, it's almost all moments like that to a certain degree, but no, I mean, for the most part, for me, it was really a 4, up until they hit the Village of the Crazies, and then it absolutely rocketed up to a 7, because it, overall, I think the entire movie existing is a WTF.
Fair enough. Nick, go ahead.
I'm giving this one a 7, a high score, and a lot of people would rate it higher. But a lot of the WTF moments, I don't think were intentional. So I'm docking it a little bit, so 7.
And you know what? There's no like zombie lesbians or like nuclear bats or anything like that. So I mean, it doesn't have those kind of WTF moments.
It doesn't have a pommel horse in the middle of a village.
Exactly.
So there's
exactly, Stan. I get you, but let me give an example. And this movie was loaded with things like this. Okay, because I mean, yeah, okay, the whole Village of the Crazies or whatever is 20 minutes of what the fuck. Like, don't get me wrong, but yes. What the fuck? Like, to me, that these WTFs, like you say, these are these things where they just have them, and it makes no sense to anything. Like that entire segment we talked about. Before they actually get to the game with it, you know, like that 10 minutes. But the one I liked is he's being trained by this two different guys, an American guy and an Asian guy, to learn the Gymkhana. And at one point, he's sitting there talking philosophy or something with the Asian guy who has this huge, massive falcon. Why it's there, it does nothing, it never shows up again. It's just one of those things where somebody went, hey, what would be cool here is a falcon. And then later on, they're like, we still rented this falcon. It's like the most expensive budget special effect in this movie. And they're like, fuck it, we already put it in once. We don't want to have too much falcon. We don't confuse people.
Maybe the Asian guy was a falconer and he actually just, really wanted to.
That type of thing was all over this, where you're just like, why are they?
Yeah, that's exactly the moment I wrote down. Why does that guy have a, it just says, why does his trainer have a falcon ! That's what I wrote down on my notes. what did you give us there, Jack?
Eight.
Yeah.
All right, I also gave it an 8, and the three things that stuck out were this: the weird model, the Falcon was my favorite. Just why is this here moment, and as Nick mentioned, the weird crazy who has a face on the back of his head, like an incredibly fake face too. it's such a strange moment.
I just don't understand how that would help him sneak up on people.
Well, no, he looked like a dummy. He looked like a mannequin in that regard. Why there's a mannequin in a corner of the street, I don't know, but it's great.
So
that's the thing. It's great.
All right, so the next one is it's kind of tangential. Like, I mean, there's a lot of things that could go into one of these two categories, the WTF category or memorable moments. So these are the lines, the scenes that will stay with you.
Now, you know, for me, this is not a particularly quotable movie. I watched this movie a few years ago originally, and I didn't really remember that much of it going in other than my sheer love for it. But the fact that it's a gymnast as a martial artist is definitely memorable. I'm going to give it a 4.
4 on that one, all right. Nick?
Yeah, it's not exactly the most quotable movie, but I have a tough time leaving the Village of Crazies. I'm going to go a little bit higher, 6.
All right.
Yeah, that's exactly it for me. I mean, I was like, this is a 4 for memorable moments. There's no lines that I would quote. There's a couple funny things, but I'm like, it's overall a bad movie. And then they got to the movie takes off at the Village of the Idiots is the thing.
and it
really went from a 4 to a 400. So for that 20 minutes. So, I mean, I will never for the rest of my life, I would probably be on my deathbed, like lying there and somebody will have my hand and say, do you have any last things that you want to say? And I'll go, Village of the Idiots. Like, this was unbelievable. It's my Rosebud.
No, I know.
It's
here's what's going to happen. You're going to be on your deathbed, but you're actually going to be stomach down and have a mask on the back of your head.
Probably true. So 7. 7 because that was so great.
All right. Well, I'm gonna be really generous here, and it's about one specific moment. I'm giving this a 9, and it's the pommel horse. It's the pommel horse itself. I just opened up YouTube, and search Gymkhana pommel horse. The first 3 returns are 2.5 minutes long, showing just that scene. They have 38,000 views, 126,000 views, and 66,000 views, which is more people than ever saw this movie. So I think the pommel horse, and that's honestly what whenever the movie has come up, that's what you say. That's like, there's this crazy scene where there's a pommel horse in the middle of a thing, and he has a fight on top of it.
Now,
do you guys think it was a real pommel horse, by the way, because they had something fake set up that looked like a pommel horse, and he kept slipping and falling off of it. So they had to bring in a real pommel horse for him.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that because it looks slightly different the first time you see it when you see the like with the goat? It looks more like something else.
It still looks remarkably like a pommel horse.
It still looks quite a bit like it.
But because everything had to be flat. Him, you couldn't do like steps or anything like that. He could only work on like a flat.
Well, he
surface.
Would need someone just to help him up to any kind of. It was like 3.5 feet tall.
Yeah, I love the fact that you know they had to sprinkle gymnastics equipment around in various places just so that he could fight.
I mentioned he had no martial arts training going into the film, right?
I think you should be careful of the qualifiers there because he had no martial arts training at the end of the film either. All right.
Oh no, he got training.
All right, we're into our last category, and this one may be where the scores really change here. the crazy concept, how wild and out there this is, that the movie exists. Stan, you first.
In fairness, like, I only gave this a 6, you know, because I look at it and it's like, the only way you can negotiate is by winning the game. The best option for the Americans is a gymnast. And the Village of Crazies, and the rest. Maybe I should have gone higher.
You can change it right now, but never again.
I'm going to go with 6. Okay, 6. I'm going to go with
Nick?
6.
I'm going with 7. I mean, on the face of it, it sounds pretty crazy, but I can understand you're in a Hollywood pitch meeting. Somebody says, you know, what if we made the star, you know, somebody who has a little bit of fame, a gymnast, they're athletic, you know, they could probably do martial arts. You know, this could be a natural fit. This could be the next big thing. I can understand that. So it's not that crazy. The end result is crazy, but on the face of it, I don't think it's totally out there. So, yeah, I'm only going with the 7.
Now, somebody's sitting there going, you know that guy from the Blue Lagoon? He's not actually a gymnast or a karate guy. Let's get one who's at least 50%.
Yeah, what would they have called it if Atkins had done
that's kind of the weird thing about this is that knowing there was someone else up for it means that all of this was in place and then they got the gymnast, which is not how I ever expected it.
I know.
I always expected that they started with the gymnast and wrapped a story around him.
I think they had the gymnast in mind, and then, you know, they had somebody else just in case this guy couldn't act.
But he couldn't.
Really? You think that was a holdout? Jack, what's your
number? I think they just wanted a fallback position.
His acting was so strong. The first time he sees this beautiful Asian princess, he looks at her and goes, hey.
I love when they're together and they just eye fuck for like half an hour, like 20 minutes. They just eye fuck completely.
Oh, actually, one of the scenes that I didn't talk about, I just want to talk about really quickly, is when he goes to save her and he's got the knife behind the woman and it's in silhouette against the screen. And then at the end, he hands the woman the knife after she tells him where the princess is. And I'm like, why did you do that?
He's like, sorry about that. That was rude.
That is my WTF moment right there. Why did they do that in silhouette behind the screen? It's like, that made no sense.
Movie magic right there.
You guys are making me want to watch this again. It's going to be so fucking awesome.
Exactly. It's that good.
I want to watch it again, too.
as a concept, I was, for most of it, I'm like, it's based on a book, it's pretty much following the basic idea of the plot of the book is the same thing, that you have to go and do this game because there's a strategic element to winning it for your country.
Really basic though, because in the book it's the Russians versus the U.S.
Well, yeah, but it's, you know, I mean, I'm like, I don't think it's that crazy. It's just, like I say, it's bad execution. Then the village. The village changed everything. So, 8.
8 here? The
village is so crazy. And I can't picture that being in the book.
I need to read the book just to you know, there's no way I'm not reading it. You know, I have to know the game, the dangerous game. I think it is.
All right. Really hope there's a
terrible game. Terrible.
Is there a comic book adaptation of this movie? Because that would be awesome.
Why isn't there?
We don't read comics. Let's ask the We Talk Comics hosts.
I read that. I read The Walking Dead.
Oh, you do?
And yeah. Well, because they give you spoilers for the TV show. So yeah, you can really feel like you can place bets on who's going to die next, and you know, always win. I win enough to pay for the comics, so it comes out even. I'm giving this a 9 on the concept. I think the fact that they had the idea and then brought someone in, I think is amazing. So that gives us all scores out of 50, and I'm I've got the, we call this the Octagon. We are going to keep track as we go through each episode, and these movies will then go into the big list as we search for the ultimate B movie.
What did everybody's add up to? Like, I know mine added up to 36 out of 10.
36 out of 50. I gave it the top score at 40 out of 50. Jack, you were next at 36. Nick, 32. And Stan, only 29. So 20 is only, I don't know how much you know about math. That's 58%. That's a little lower.
What? Wait. If it's a 29, then how can it, and this has got to be in the contender for the ultimate B movie.
So well, it'll be interesting as we go through scores.
Yeah.
And we right now, but we have nothing to compare it to.
Exactly. Yeah. Sure. I think the problem is that what it all came down to is for me is that there's, I love it. I want to watch it all the time, but it's, and it has moments of absolute craziness, but it doesn't have a lot of those extremely over the top moments that maybe I'm expecting out of a B movie that for me will eventually come in those scoring.
All right. Well, and we have six secret modifiers. Each season we will have six secret modifiers, and we'll tell you as one pops up. This movie only one of the modifiers came up. Jim Cotta did have a wider theatrical release, which takes one away from its final point, its final score. It opened, according to Box Office Mojo, opened on 654 screens, which was fairly decent at the time. I mean, now it's nothing, but at the time it was pretty okay. So that gives us a grand total of 67.5 out of 100 for Jim Cotta.
Interesting. All right. I like it. So we're only telling them the modifiers when they show up.
That's right. That was what I decided just now.
Yeah, apparently, because I'm trying to think to myself, and I'm realizing now I don't know the modifiers. Then,
well, see there, I want the listeners to keep track at home.
Okay.
See if they can. That's put good. A full list. So, hopefully, they'll have a full list by the end. Otherwise, we picked poor modifiers.
Really terrible modifiers.
What's the next movie I'm supposed to watch? I better get to watching it.
Stan, why don't you tell him what's next?
Okay, the next movie. It's destined to be a true classic in our minds. It has actually three titles, which is fantastic. So this is The King of the Kickboxers, also known as Karate Tiger 4, and also known as No Retreat, No Surrender 4. So whichever one of those you want to watch. That's the one you should watch. And I'm looking forward to it. It's got Lauren Avedon and Billy Blanks. I mean, who doesn't love Billy Blanks? Come on, right? So anyways, I'm really looking forward to King of the Karate Tigers, No Surrenders 4.
All right, cool. Hey, this was fun, guys. I mean, I know it's new, but we'll get better, right? I hope we get better.
Well, we can't get worse. I mean, that's the plus side.
And hopefully Brad will be back next episode, and we'll get the whole team going.
I say we don't start it unless he's here.
Well,
see how we're doing. We'll see how we're doing. We got to stick to a schedule.
And here you got to understand this. I mean, you've not really met Brad before, but Brad's pretty bad for being late.
Okay.
So I mean, it's you gotta understand that. But I do want to thank everybody: Jim, Jack, Nick, Stan, of course, myself, and Brad, wherever the hell he is. And
when do we tell people what's the next season?
You know, I'm thinking not yet. not episode one. We don't.
All right.
We don't want to give it all away, right?
All right, but soon we'll tell them what the next season is, and then we'll tell them what the movies are, and we'll try and build some hype and shit.
I like it. We want people to start listening and start watching the films and being part of the experience.
Yeah, we want them to know.
Exactly.
Yeah, so go.
And we want you to.
Yeah.
Well, we've got an Instagram page, don't we, Jim?
We do. We do use hashtag Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo and show us your favorite B movies. We've only planned out the next 50 or 60, so we're always looking for suggestions.
Oh God!
So number one, follow along as we do it. Watch them as we go.
Oh, that reminds me, guys. I have a new season idea: Road Rage. Not road but roid. Like
roid rage.
So we'll have okay. we'll have you know. Anyways, I better not say it.
Jake, keep it in your pants, already. Man. Keep it in your pants.
My name is Jack. Jack Hall. Thank you.
Jack Hall.
Jack Hall.
Let's end this sucker. Nicholas out.